Hello, and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. My name is Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast. Today, I am thrilled to have as our guest Representative Karen Peterson. Representative Peterson has had an incredible background in public service, both as an office holder, a candidate, and behind the scenes, and I cannot wait for her to share some of her wisdom with us today. Thank you so much for being here, Representative Peterson.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Now, would you just introduce yourself and maybe tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to where you are in the Utah House and kind of what your story is?
Yeah, so there's a Sheryl Sandberg quote, probably a lot of you have heard that say, for women, we don't have career ladders, we have career jungle gyms. And that is definitely the path that I have taken. So I started my college at Utah State University. I got a little bit interested. I was always interested in politics and the political office, but I didn't know that you really could have a career doing it. So I was a little skeptical to get a degree in political science, but I had some professors that encouraged me to try it. So I did. And part of that was I was able to do an internship for the Utah legislature. And that internship was really eye-opening. From that internship, I moved to a second internship for the mayor of Logan. And between those two internships in school, I really found my passion in state and local government. And the things that happened at the state level and the local level and how accessible those things were, that was really impactful to me. So, but then I, married my husband. He's an engineer, and our first job was up in Seattle. So we moved up there, and I had my first kid, and I really wanted to be home with my kids. I thought that was important to me. So, we had three kids, and I stayed home with my kids for 10 years until my baby went to kindergarten. And when my baby went to kindergarten, I decided, okay, I'm interested in getting back involved professionally, but I was a little nervous about that gap in my resume. So I decided to get my master's degree, and I thought that might be a good way to re-enter the workforce. So I made some phone calls to people who I'd worked with. So I did a lot of volunteering in those 10 years, in the PTA and with other organizations. And so I made some phone calls, asked people if they'd be willing to write letters of recommendation for me to go to grad school. One of those phone calls was to Tammy Piper. She was at the time the chair of the State Board of Education. And I'd done some contract work, just little jobs over the years for the State Board. And so I'd gotten to know her, plus with my volunteer work with the PTA. So I called her and asked if she would be willing to write a letter of recommendation for me. She was. Shortly after that, she was appointed to be the education advisor for Governor Herbert. And a few months later, she called me and she said, "Do you need a professional project for your degree? Could you come help me for a legislative session? Because I just need help. It's too much for one person." And so I said, "Sure, I'd love to do that." So we worked it out with the school, and I was able to count that as one of my classes and do a professional project in the governor's office, which was amazing. It was an incredible experience. It finished, and a couple months went by. Well, the governor's office kept calling me and asking me, "Can you help with this?" or "Can you help with that?" And finally, about August came around. I think I finished working there in March, but August came around, and she called me once and asked me to do something. And I thought, I'm going to say something. And I said, "I really love helping you out, but I don't actually work for you. And I haven't for about 6 months. And I would love to work there, but I don't. And I kind of feel like you're asking me to do things that you would ask an employee to do." Mm-hmm. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I thought, "Oh my gosh, I hope I did not burn that bridge." But the next day she called me and she said, "We had a conversation in the office and we'd like to extend a job offer to you to come be the deputy education advisor in the governor's office." So it was one of those times where you had to be a little brave and do that. So I worked for the governor of Utah, Governor Herbert, for 5 years as the deputy education advisor. I did not have background in education, but my background was more, in public policy and state and local government. And so I did a lot of the work on legislation and initiatives that the governor was interested in that way. When Governor Herbert finished his term, Governor Cox asked me to stay on as the Director of Legislative Affairs. So I negotiated with the legislature on behalf of the governor. And then almost a year ago now, I got a call from my state representative who said that he had gotten a new job with the state and that he planned to resign the next day and that there was going to be a special election to be in the legislature. And he really thought I should put my name in. And it was a big decision. And one I had to make in about 24 hours because they were going to announce and have the special election over the course of 2 weeks, really quick special election.
Wow.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I knew if I won, I would have to quit my job with the governor because obviously you couldn't work in two branches of government. So it was a big decision, but it was one of those nights that you spend talking to your husband all night and, saying some prayers and deciding what you want to do. And so I decided to run and I won. And so now I'm running currently for re-election. The election's, on Tuesday. So hopefully I will win. But one thing maybe I kind of skipped is I did serve also on my city council for two terms while I was working for Governor Herbert. I served two terms on the city council in the town where I live too. So that's kind of the wild journey that I have taken to where I am now.
Yeah, I see why you call that a jungle gym, but it's kind of incredible that, you worked for people, you kind of networked a little bit, and then people liked your work and wanted you to do more of it. So that's fantastic. And I can't believe that you had a special election in 2 weeks. Tell me about that. I want to hear about that now. I mean, how did that happen and work?
So in Utah, they have it's a caucus system. I think it's a little different than maybe some other states, but people have neighborhood caucuses, right? So in March, usually of every year, they have a neighborhood caucus where you go and you can be elected by your neighbors. Each party holds their own. And so in Utah, it's county delegates. And then the county delegates do kind of the nominating of the people who are represent their party on the ballot. There are a couple of other ways to access the ballot in Utah. We don't want to talk about all that. But if there's a vacancy, what they do is they just bring those delegates in because they consider it the seat belonging to that party. And they bring in those delegates and just those delegates get a vote. So it is a fast and furious election with a small number of people. So I think I had about 75 delegates that I had to convince that they should vote for me. And five of us were running. So it wasn't, in any way a gimme. And there were two others especially that were incredibly qualified. So it was a fast and furious and interesting 2 weeks. And it ended up being the election. So they actually hold an in-person election. They have to come. And that election was the week before Christmas. So bless those delegates' hearts for coming the Saturday before Christmas to vote,
Wow. I didn't realize that's how a special election worked in Utah. I mean, that's an incredible process and very different than a lot of other places.
Yes, but this is, if you live in Utah, you should be involved in the delegate system because I don't think people realize what influence they can have on who the elected officials are unless they've served as a delegate or participated. So it's a really great way for everyone to be involved and to help with that process.
Yeah. And so they have the neighborhood caucuses in March and that's where people should go and get involved and run for delegate. Because why not? It's just your neighborhood, right?
Exactly. Yes. And you make your husband nominate you and then, then have your friends come and vote for you. It's, often these caucus meetings only have, maybe 20 people show up and there's usually like four or five positions they're trying to elect. So it's a great way to get involved.
Yeah. And I mean, what's the time commitment like if you are a delegate? What, you go to convention? How many?
Yeah. So you go to one convention a year, which is like one Saturday morning a year. You get a lot of emails and texts and those kind of things, when you're a delegate. But that's really it. That's your commitment. Unless there is an instance like mine where somebody resigns. And then that's a great position to be in because you're the one that get to vet the candidates then.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of amazing. I think that is something Project Elect definitely needs to encourage women to do because I'm sure a lot of people don't even know when their neighborhood caucuses are and how easy it is to get involved in that. It's such a not intimidating way to get involved, right?
Yeah, you show up and you know almost everyone there because it's literally like your neighborhood. It's your precinct. So you will know pretty much everybody in the room. And so it's kind of a nice experience to go and, you know, visit with your neighbors and then, you know, do the elections.
Yeah, absolutely. And not a huge time commitment, and you'll get to know a lot of people at the convention. I mean, I've been to countless state conventions, and they're really great places to meet candidates, to meet people working behind the scenes and in your state and doing good things because everybody's there. And that's,
definitely
a great way to get started. Mm-hmm. All right, Utah residents, you know what you got to do next.
That's right. Call me if you need instructions on how to do it.
Exactly. Well, we got a little off track, which was great because that was a wonderful little segue into the Utah caucus system. I'm always fascinated by how different states do their elections. Such a lot of variety. So I did want to ask you a little bit about, you know, you were on city council. You've been an elected official. When was that special election? How long have you been in?
That was like a year ago.
A year ago. So just a year. And I kind of looked up some of the legislation you sponsored, and you've done a lot for families and children and education. And it sounds like that's kind of a passion of yours. So what are some things that you've been able to do as an elected official that you are proud of?
So because I haven't been an elected official in the state very long, and because I was sworn in 10 days before the session started, I was pretty excited about, you know, that first of all, I could even get my legislation drafted in time. I mean, it takes time to get a bill actually, you know, written, physically written. So I was thrilled that I was able to get four bills drafted and all passed in a 45-day session.
Wow.
It was pretty, it was a sprint to say the least. But I am really passionate about parents and opportunities and children and families. I worry in Utah, you know, we're seeing birth rates declining because I just think families are so important to who we are as a society, and we have to think about ways to support our families and to support our students and our children. It's just, it's who we are as a state, and we can't ever lose sight of that. It's really important. So the one bill I was probably most excited about, the majority of the bills I ended up running then were small tweaks to existing programs that, you know, people had had issues with, and then they reached out to me. And because of my familiarity with education, you know, I carried those bills. But the bill that I probably felt most passionately about, and the bill that probably came from me the most, is there was not a good website or place where parents could compare schools. So Utah has a really robust charter school system. And we also have really good laws relating to allowing parents to send their kid to their neighborhood school or even to another school in their district with a variance or some sort of, you know, permit or those kinds of things. But it's hard for parents to look and compare the schools in their area and decide where they want to send their kids. We have nowhere to do that. But we have all the data about schools. And so it just kind of felt silly to me that we hadn't pulled it all into one place. So a parent could go on. So this is what the legislation they passed does. A parent will be able to go on. They'll be able to put in their address. They'll be able to put a certain mile radius around their home. And then it will give them all the schools. They'll be able to select which schools they want to compare. It'll give them side-by-side comparisons of how those schools are doing, you know, on the things that everyone cares about, math and reading, but also graduation rates and ACT scores. Also, do the schools have special programming? Maybe it's a charter school with a special STEM focus or with a music and arts focus. But having all of that side by side, so you're really comparing the same things. If you have to just go to each school's website, they're going to tell you what they want you to know about their school, but they might not be able to give you the full picture. Even just like teacher turnover rates, like what does that look like at the schools? What are their ratios? Those kind of things. I wanted parents to be able to have that kind of information as they made decisions about where they send their kids to school. So that bill passed, and they're working on creating that dashboard now. I'm hoping it will roll out in the next few months. So I'm proud of that. I think that there's more we can do there, and I'm excited to be thinking about, you know, what the next steps on that might be. So as a state elected official, that's probably the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, you describing that, I'm starting to tear up a little bit because I'm thinking about how transformational that type of website would have would be for me and my kids. You know, just I don't live in Utah, but you know, if the state had something like that, that you can compare schools, that's one of the biggest decisions you make as a parent. And it's one of the decisions I've just agonized over so much, you know, where should I send my kids to school? And you know, you can't find the data. And it just makes me so happy that people like you are in the legislature and thinking about things like that, that because you have kids, you know what it's like, you know how hard it is. You know, there's lots of great schools out there and you want to find the best one for your particular child. And what inspired legislation. I love that so much. Thank you.
Well, good. I was excited about it and I'll be excited to see it roll out. I'm they've sent me a couple mock-ups, so every time they send them, I get a little excited to, you know, think about getting it live. So hopefully soon. I'm hoping it will be live in time for parents to make decisions, you know, for their next school year, and then they can put in for a lot of the charters have lotteries or, you know, admissions processes. So I'm hoping it's out in time that parents can have that information before they decide, you know, which of those lotteries or variances they want to apply for.
That's incredible. So tell me, what do you think prepared you in your life for the role you have right now in the state legislature? What kind of experiences have you had that you feel make you a good legislator and give you a perspective, that this amazing perspective you have?
Well, I think a lot of it was, I think being a mom gives you a lot of perspective. I talked about my concern about declining birth rates. I feel like I am a different person from having been a mother. Like, what I have learned as a mother has just transformed who I am, and in a good way, right? It's made me more empathetic and more understanding of how kids just come so programmed differently, and you know, every family trying to respond to that and navigating the system on behalf of your children, you know, the healthcare system and the education system and all of those things you do as a parent. I think just good, solid life experience prepares you for public office. I also think, I volunteered with the state PTA for a number of years, and I'm kind of on there. They had a legislative affairs council, and, you know, they talked about legislation, and they talked about, you know, different people. It helped me really be familiar with the legislators, the kind of issues people were talking about. And even just in those committee meetings, we would often debate the bills ourselves. We would have conversations about, should the PTA support this? Should they not? What are the arguments for it? What are the arguments against it? And that has been, that was incredible, you know, learning space too. I loved working for Governor Herbert because he was very collaborative. He would always ask the staff, why would I not do that? I hear what you're recommending and I can understand why, but why would I not do it? Who wouldn't be happy with that decision? Who do we need to talk to that would feel differently? And he was incredibly collaborative. And that was really helpful because I knew he was always going to ask me those kinds of questions and I had to be prepared to answer them. So it made me have to learn those things, like, what different groups work at the Capitol? What kind of things and issues do they engage in? How would they feel about these different bills or proposals? And what's some nuances here? So I think that those things really prepared me. I would also say serving on a city council is an incredible experience to learn how to work with the public, to learn how to be representative, to learn how to handle yourself in a heated or uncomfortable situation that's very public. The city council is a nice place to learn a lot of those things, plus learn about the essential services of government, which is really why we're here, to provide, you know, those essential services. So to understand how those work and how financing and taxes work, and you know, that basic understanding is really helpful. One of the reasons I decided to make the jump and run for the legislature is because I felt like right now in our Utah State Legislature, we don't have a lot of people with experience in local government who understand the roles of cities and counties. And I felt like that perspective was missing and that I could help bring that to the legislature of what's the role of the state, but what's the role of our local governments and how do we support them and maybe give, you know, guidelines or guardrails, but also let them determine their own outcomes for their communities and create programming that works for them, for the people that live where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's incredible. I think you've had so many experiences, and I like how you mentioned being a mother and working in the PTA, because that's something that so many women have done and don't really realize how much they've learned from that and how many skills they develop when they're working in their kids' schools, just, you know, doing stuff that they naturally are doing.
Yeah, well, and I think it just helps you be organized. It helps you have a read on your community, what the issues are. It just helps you network with other people in your community. Sometimes I think we discredit our volunteer experience as not real experience because we weren't paid for it. But that doesn't mean we haven't learned, and it hasn't prepared us to do other things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, women running for office and kind of the hesitations that they have. What kind of hesitations have you seen women express when they're considering running for public offices, especially Latter-day Saint women? And do you have anything you say to them?
Running for office is terrifying. They don't. I am still terrified. I'm running right now, and it just makes me a nervous wreck. But the thing is, you can do it, right? So I remember the first time I ran was for city council in 2013. And I had been volunteering in my community to work on, they were doing a new general plan. So like a conversation about what do we want our community to look like 20 years from now. And so they asked me to come be on this committee because I'd done some volunteer work at the city before. So they knew me. They asked me to come. It was a couple planning commissioners, a couple people from the city council, and then they gathered residents from different corners of the city, and they asked me to come be part of that. And it was a great experience. We spent about a year talking to residents and building a plan and talking about who we wanted to be. And we finished that, and we finished it, and the council, city council adopted it about a week before filing period opened to run for city council. And I was not planning on running. I called a number of people and said, I think you would be so great on the city council. And I know you helped us work on this plan, and I really hate to see it be shelved after all the work and community engagement that's happened. You really should run. And a whole bunch of people said, oh, I'd love to do that at some point, but you know, right now I have a calling where I can't do it, or right now my job doesn't support that, or, you know, it would be difficult for me to do. I'd like to do it maybe later. And, the filing weeks opened, and I seriously kept calling people. Like, I called people up until filing was open Monday through Friday, and up until Wednesday, I was calling people saying, you really should run. And about on Thursday, I had the realization it was me. I was the person that had to run. And so I filed on the last day, and I came home and told my husband I was going to throw up. I can't believe I just did that. I can't believe I just went for office. What am I thinking? This will be a really public way to fail. And it was terrifying. But also, I thought, you know, I do have something to offer. I'm probably the only person that's read the sewer master plan that's running. You know, like, I know a lot about our city. I actually do. And I care about this. And I have something to offer, and so I'm going to do it. And it wasn't always easy, but overall, every time I've run for public office, it has been a positive experience. I have met incredible people in my community that I didn't know before. I have just had overwhelming support with people volunteering and being willing to help you out, and even just people putting their sign in, you know, your sign in their yard. Like, it's really meaningful. Like, you feel like, my gosh, they'll, you know, tell everyone that they support me. Like, that means a lot. And overall, it's been a positive experience. And I want to tell you too, an evolution that I've seen, which is what the first time I ran, I had multiple people say to me, how can you run for city council? You have little kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would always respond with, but I'm running for city council because I have little kids. I want my kids to be able to walk home from school and be safe. And I want to know that they can afford to live in our community. And I know what families are going through. And, you know, I'm still clipping coupons and looking at the ads and shopping that way. And I know that other families are doing that too. And that's actually why I'm running for the city council. And great news, they have a dad, and he's home in the evening when city council meetings are. So they'll be with their dad, and that will be great. It's not even babysitting because he's the parent, you know, it's great. Uh-huh. So I did experience that the first time I ran, But the last time I ran, I didn't hear it from anyone. I have yet to hear it this time. And I mean, part of it is my kids are a little bit older now, maybe. But the other thing is, I do think that there is a change. And when I ran in 2017, I was the only woman candidate on the ballot. And I had multiple women say to me, well, I didn't know a ton about you, but you were the only woman running. And I knew we needed women involved. And so I supported you. And that was, even just in those 4 years, I felt like there has been a change in our society, in our community, of valuing the role of making sure, you know, we have qualified and competent women, and we need them at the table. And people understand that there is value there. And I always tell my husband, I'll know that we've really made it, maybe, when I have men say to me, you were the only woman on the ballot, and so I made sure I looked into you to see if you were qualified, right? I feel like that's when we'll know, like, maybe we've really gotten there. But those are just maybe some experiences I've had and one of the challenges. But I will say, overall, running has been positive, and my public service has been positive. There are always people that contact you that are angry. That happens. There are people that contact you that disagree. That happens. And it's all okay. It's okay for those things to happen. And you can handle them. You've dealt with snotty teenagers. You can handle it. You can do it.
Yeah. Online trolls have nothing on snotty teenagers, right?
That's right. 'Cause they live in your home.
Exactly. So. You can't get away. Turn the computer off. Well, how do you deal with, I mean, we're joking about it, but how do you deal with it when people are just mean and vicious and sometimes hiding behind, you know, an anonymous profile or online or something like that? Because I know everyone who runs for office gets that.
And, everyone.
You know, how do you handle that internally?
So the first thing is realizing everyone gets it. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. There are people out there who are just unkind and mean and angry and you know, live in a dark place. They just do. And they take it out on people who they see as that they can, because they're public officials. So you have to be able to separate yourself and say, you know, so I'm a Republican, and probably anyone that ran in my area and won will be a Republican. This is a very Republican area, right? And so often I'll get upset emails from someone that maybe has different political views than me, and they're upset. And I often think, it's okay. Anyone who is sitting in this seat would be getting this email. It's not to me personally. It's just that this is how they're engaging in the political process. What does Leslie Knope say? This is how they're caring loudly. You know, like, they're just, you know, and good for them. Like, good for them. That's what we want. We want, you know, people to have different opinions and to different perspectives and come at it different ways, because then we solve problems better. Yeah. But you also, it's unfortunate, I have to also say, it's unfortunate that people feel like they can treat people that way. I have been, you know, in situations where people have just been screaming in your face, and I have thought, I don't know how we've gotten to a place where it's okay for you to feel like you can treat me that way. I don't understand that. But I want to share an experience I had when I was running for office. I was knocking doors. It was when I was running for city council, and I loved knocking doors because I just felt like it was a great way to just talk to people on their porch and hear what they cared about. And I learned a ton from the people that visited with me. But one day I knocked on this gentleman's door, and he had a lot to say, and he was not particularly happy. And he would ask me what I thought about something, and I would share my perspective, and he would disagree. And then he would, you know, proceed to disagree loudly. And, you know, this kind of went on for about, I don't know, at least 10 minutes or so, which feels long when someone is, you know, that excited. And so at the, you know, I kind of was thinking, okay, well, he's clearly not going to vote for me. I don't know if this is incredibly productive. So I just said to him, well, I do want you to know, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. And I want you to still vote. So on my flyer, it says the date of the election, and I might not be your candidate, but I do hope that you'll still go vote. Mm-hmm. And I turned around and I walked down the stairs. I was about halfway down his stairs, and he said, you stop right there. You know, kind of freeze, you know, and I turn around and he said, I'm going to vote for you. I have never had anyone come and listen to me like you just listened to me. And that was a really powerful lesson to me. And I do think that some of the anger right now and some of the feeling like I have to scream and yell and I have to post online and I have to do these things is this feeling that I'm not being listened to. People aren't trying to understand my perspective. They're discrediting my life experiences that have brought me to this place, or they're not seeing what I'm seeing, and they don't, you know, they're not listening. My elected officials are not listening to me. And so that has been a real lesson to me, that one of the most important things I can do is listen and be an engaged listener and be willing to understand where they're coming from. And in the end, I might not vote the way that they wanted me to vote, because there are 45,000 people in my district and they all don't want me to vote the same way. So, you know, you have to just do your due diligence to do the best that you can. But I can listen to them and I can make sure that they know that they're heard. And I can explain to them why I'm with them or why on this one I'm not, but how I might be in the future. And that's a really important thing that I think we as elected officials can be doing to help turn the temperature down.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic story. And I love the perspective that you have about people just wanting to be listened to. And we live in a very heated political environment these days. And you're absolutely right. People are feeling like they're getting discredited instantly by the other side and want someone to listen to them. And what a powerful experience to have him actually tell you that, you know, right there. Thanks for sharing that story. So I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, running for office and that experience. You know, you talked about how you had young kids, and I've talked to a lot of women who, you know, have done this with young kids, have done it when their kids are older. But young kids, that's a hard time to run for office. And how did your family support you? How was that on your family? Did your kids appreciate it, like it, hate it? You know, there's always a spectrum.
There is. My oldest son is on his mission now, and he said the other day, "I'm so grateful I'm missing this election." Because they know when I run, it is a family affair. Like, they have all delivered door hangers. They have all put up signs. They have all helped. I've gone to events. They've all gone to lots of events. And my husband has been incredibly supportive. I always tell him every campaign season, "You're the real MVP. Don't ever forget. It's not me. It's you. You're the one making this happen." You know, just last night, about 7:30 at night, we heard about one of my signs flapping in the wind on a main road. And so we were out there with, you know, zip ties trying to get it fixed in this windstorm. I could not have run for office without the incredible support of my family. And, you know, they're cool opportunities that they get because, you know, I'm an elected official. Like, they get to come have lunch with the mayor, or, you know, they've all my kids have met the governor, you know, and got to come to the governor's mansion. And so hopefully some of the good things that they get to experience have outweighed the work that it's been for all of us. And they know too. I mean, one of the challenges of being an elected official, especially in a state like Utah that has a really short legislative session, is like for 45 days, they know it's going to be hard for me to be at their things and to, you know, be home for dinner and to help with homework. And, you know, but they all kind of get it and they step up and they all, you know, do what they can. And, you know, it's nice. We have text and all those things now. You can keep in contact with your kids and make sure, you know, in those really busy times that you're still, you know, checking in on your family, making sure, you know, that they know if there was an emergency, you would leave the Capitol and come for them, you know? But I think that sometimes we think having small kids is a liability to running for office, when I would argue it's an asset, because what you want to talk about when you're running for office is the future of your community. And what a better visual than the fact that you care about the future of your community because you're raising your family in that community. And so I would say, don't ever think about having small children as a liability. Think about it as a campaign asset and a way that you can share your message.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people in your district have small kids and have similar concerns about them that you do. And you just have a perspective. And I think moms with little kids have a different perspective than anybody else does. I mean, it's just a different phase of life and your concerns are different. And that perspective is important. There's a lot of people out there who need that perspective represented. So
exactly.
I completely agree with you. We are running short on time, and I just love to end with an invitation from you about something that our listeners can do in the next week to get them prepared to engage more in public service.
So one of the things I had thought about before this interview is I always love women to get involved. Sometimes I've seen women run for office and I've felt disappointed that I felt like they ran for the wrong thing. Like that they hadn't quite, you know, maybe done their homework on what that race would be like and if they were prepared. Like I saw people run in Utah before that don't understand the delegate system we talked about at the beginning. And you can't run for a political party office if you don't understand that system, you know. So this is what I would say. Anytime I've even considered or thought of running for office, I've called the people in my community who I trust, who are people in your community that you think, when I think of our community, I think of these people as the community leaders. And some of those are going to be church officials, are going to be stake presidents or others that you know. And have a conversation with them about the involvement that you're interested in. If you're interested in running, ask them for their advice. Ask them, do you think this is the right thing? How, if I did this, what do I bring? What do you see that I bring? What does our community need? And how can I help with that need? And that has always been really helpful to me to know, first of all, what's on their minds. And second, just to feel like you're creating a network of support amongst your community so that you're not going this alone. You cannot run for office alone. And also, don't discredit other opportunities. So sitting on that committee to help with my city's general plan led to me being on the city council, led to me being in the legislature, right? So those things that you're doing, don't discredit them and feel like it's okay to take those kinds of steps if you're interested in doing that.
That's a fantastic recommendation and invitation to women to, you know, find out who knows what's going on in the community. And if they don't know about an issue, talk to them and figure out what is needed before they decide to run for office. Have a reason to run. Don't just run to run.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. And thank you so much for joining us today. You are so wonderful to talk to. And I love the attitude and positivity you bring to all of this. It's really refreshing and wonderful. And I'm sure you're going to have many more years in the state legislature doing amazing things. And I can't wait to see what
we'll
those are.
After Election Day, won't we?
We will. I can't wait till Election Day is over myself, so it'll be good. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the Project Elected podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org. We would love it if you would subscribe, rate, or give us a review on iTunes. Until next time.